thing about reading.
The girl with the what?
Yeah.
With what
with
kind of tattoo?
Dragon, yeah.
She's got some dragon on her somewhere. Hey, thanks for being here today. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for inviting me.
You think
Dan.
I can get you back in? We can yak movie books.
We'll think of some more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know you probably got tons of stuff coming up, but the one thing I heard you mention earlier was like Water for Elephants or Water for Elephants.
And Sarah Gruden.
Yeah, I read that book. She's a secretly Canadian, I guess. And I dug that book, so I'm looking forward to seeing is it Ryan Gosling and Reese Witherspoon?
No, it's Robert Pattinson, the Twilight heartthrob.
Yeah.
Edward, is that his name? I forget the character.
He's Edward.
Name, yeah,
good
he's
work.
The vampire.
Good work, so. Papa. So you've been tuned into Books for Breakfast today. That's about the end of another show. Thanks for listening out there on this beautiful day where people are convocating and broken hearts are abound in Vancouver. But we can mend those with good books and good movies. It's been a treat to have you here, Peter. I guess we'll get you back another time.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in. And upcoming is Sarah Mangle's show, These Things That People Make.
We're listening to 93.3 FM.
The following is a rundown of upcoming events by Ed Video.
Ed Video Media Arts Center has some upcoming workshops for the months of June and July. June 7th, we have cinematics. June 8th, creating a film poster. June 13th, camera operation. June 14th, an equipment open house. June 20th, DSLR filmmaking. July 1st marks the start of the Ed Video Killed the Radio Star program. July 5th, we have a female empowerment in genre film lecture. July 11th, intro to Pro Tools. July 14th, intro to Lightwave. July 20th, intro to Final Cut Pro. And July 29th, we have a fifth night of wonder. Visit edvideo.org for more information and updates.
CFRU is a proud sponsor of Ed Video Media Arts Center.
Freak Scene is named after this song by Dinosaur Jr., which probably more than anything gives you a good idea of what you're going to hear. Plenty of hard-hitting alternative. Not to be limited to just that, though. You'll hear everything that rocks. Things might even get mellow every once in a while. You just never know. Check it out Monday nights from 8 to 10 here on CFRU.
Hello, you are listening to the June 16th, 2011 edition of These Things That People Make. Welcome to the show. These Things That People Make is a radio show that is 2.5 years old. Once a week, we bring you interviews with people who make all kinds of things, discussing the politics and stories behind their projects. We are broadcast over the radio waves at CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph and other campus and community stations across Canada, and on the internet at Radio for All. You can check out past shows and information about all the guests we've ever had on the show by visiting the blog, thesethingsthatpeoplemake.blogspot.com. Today's show is an interview with the fabulous Coco Riot, who lives in Montreal. And Coco is a zine maker, artist, and organizer who spoke with me about two projects, You Even Queers, which is an 80-page self-published book with many of the queer comics, texts, and illustrations made of the last year by Coco Riot, all of them finally translated into Coco's mother tongue, which is Spanish. Coco has toured You Even Queers for 1 month in Spain, meeting and collaborating with local artists and organizing on the way. An unexpected success was built during the travel. You Even Queers appears in local and national televisions, radios, newspapers, blogs, both mainstream and activist. Coco Riot has since then been invited to talk at universities, festivals, and events in Canada, Spain, Argentina, and Mexico, and has given interviews to media in Spain, Canada, Argentina, Mexico, and the UK. Dealing with issues of queer politics, but also with experiences of migration and language, You Even Queers is a graphic novel full of personal, intimate experiences that go from questioning polyamory to stories about relationships and street violence. And the other project that we talk about in this interview is a zine project called This Is About Having an Accent. And this is a new comic that deals with being a non-WASP or white Franco-Canadian within organizing and queer communities. Bringing up issues of language and how accents and allophone speakers are read and heard, this comic shows reactions, comments, and experiences that we get when our mother tongue is not the majority one. Specifically, this is about having an accent and deals with Coco Riot's experience of being a Spanish speaker in a WASP organizing circles. From cuteness to constant interruptions, from Latin lover to overreacting, from exotification of Latin America and Spanish social movements to the internationally coolness of going to save Chiapas or drinking more beer in Barcelona. So I've just been reading those descriptions from Coco Riot's website that you can check out while you listen to this interview at CocoRiot.com. Coco and I met at Naco Cafe in Toronto, and we were joined by Mr. Lim, who is Alicia Lim's dad. And if you've been following These Things That People Make for a while, you'll know that Alicia has been a guest on These Things That People Make twice with their awesome 100 Butches project and the Illustrated Gentleman calendar. So once again, if you want to check out Coco Riot's work while you listen to the interview, check out Coco's website, CocoRiot.com. Coco, you've been making things for a long time.
For a very long time.
Could you tell me the history of you making things?
The history of me making things is a weird question. I started making zines in 2003, I think, when I ran out of comics to read. So I decided to make them myself. That's what I did. But I think the history also starts before I came. My parents were very young when I was born, and so they decided to make drawings and jewelry and to sell it in a stand on markets. So I was like a baby. I was a very young kid, and I was doing that already on a stand. And so I have the theory. That's why I'm pretty good selling things on stands, because that's my oldest job ever. I've done that for all my life.
And what's your selling things in a stand strategy? Like, what do you think makes
it? I always stand up.
That is a really good idea.
Yes. Sit down when you're... Always stand up and say hi to people and be very smiling and never sell things to people. Just tell them, if you have any question, I'm here to answer you. So they feel more comfortable. They don't feel like they have to rush to buy some things.
Yeah. That's really good advice.
Yeah.
Okay. So you were a child and your parents were selling things they were making.
Yes. And I was making things with them, like jewelry and paintings and...
That's awesome.
...drawings. So, yeah. I grew up with a stand, and then I was making zines. And I got in fine arts school in a pretty elite
find out at school in France because of the zines, which is very surprising.
And when you were a kid, were other people around you making, like, was there a zine culture that you grew up with? Or like
not at all. No, there was a lot of comic culture. My aunt used to work for a comic publishing house, so I was surrounded by very, like, underground comics all the time, and my dad loves comics, and he loves drawing. My mom loves drawing, and she loves art. So, never zines. I think zines are not so, or at least were not so popular also in Hispanophone cultures, and especially come from a very small southern town in Spain. So I don't remember seeing zines. I remember seeing like comics that people did. So maybe they look like zines now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there were probably lots of people making things.
Probably.
Like, on their own.
Exactly. And people didn't have so much money.
Yeah.
You know, my family didn't have so much money at the time, and everyone was doing things. And yeah. So I grew up with this culture almost of like do-it-yourself thing in many, many ways. And so when I ran out of comics to read, I decided, well, people has always said that I draw pretty well, so I'm going to put that in practice, you know? And I've been always like trying to make my own comics when I was a kid, so that feels like very natural to me.
Tell me more about those comics, those early comics that you made.
My early comics that I made?
Yeah.
There's always like, I was trying to copy like characters, you know, like cartoon comics, and I was also copying like big painters. So I don't know if you remember, there is like a paint by Manet that I did so many times when I was a kid. Because I wanted to make it.
What did it look like?
It's like a kid playing the flute.
Okay.
I don't know why I decided to make that.
Yeah.
It's pretty boring now. But it was very interesting just to try to repeat and trying to do something like, trying to create art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what sort of stuff did you do in art school?
So in art school, I started making Genderpool, which is a project that I'm still doing right now. So it's been alone for a long time. It's about bathroom signs that visualize people who are not visible in our societies because of gender, race, and ableism, and class, and etc. There are 80 of them, so there are many, many issues going on there. I made some video too.
Okay.
So I started making videos over there, and I kept on doing drawings.
Yeah. And do you add to the gender poo? Do you continue to add to it?
Yeah, I always add every time I add. So I think at the beginning it was like only 20 signs or something like that. And I made an animation film also about gender poo. And now it's 80. There are 80 different signs. And so I cover the walls of the bathrooms with them. And it has been a very good project. It has been shown in contemporary art museums. Like it was shown in New York for the Young Spanish Artist event happening in New York. So I was like one of the person chosen to present my work, and Genderpool was the job that was chosen. So it has a lot of visibility, and it's also shown in like a lot of festivals and events. Yeah,
it's such a great name, Genderpool.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, it's a funny game. I think the project tries to be like something that you can laugh, you can smile, you can think, and you can question yourself about it.
But it's also intense. There's some intense images.
Yeah. Yeah, very intense. I think like all the things I do, they're always like very intense, but also like they have like also this beauty, or they have also like this humor. I don't want to make things heavy. I think making things, you can make things that are intense, but it's still sweet or intense, but it's still light.
Yeah.
Hello, you are listening to These Things That People Make, and today we are airing an interview with Coco Riot. We return now to that interview.
This is, this is my project that I've been doing since last year, I think, for 1 year now. And it all came from the idea that all my zines and all my comics and my texts are written in French and English, which are not my mother tongues. And my Spanish and friends were like, you should do something in Spanish.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. The Spanish don't sell. Nobody speaks Spanish. You know, I live in Canada, so it was like, why should I? I mean, it's not my community. It wasn't feeling like that in Montreal, at least. And my friend took a plane from Spain, and they came to Montreal, and they sit down with me, and they said, "Now you're going to translate this." So I had to. I was like a little bit like forced to translate everything because I felt very bad because they came.
Yeah,
there's a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of pressure, and so I translated my comics and I lay out the book. It's a 90 pages book, full color book, and. I published it. I have the chance to be experienced, to have experience in publishing. So it has an ISBN. It's in the national libraries and everything. So
who published it?
I published it myself.
You published it yourself.
It's self-published
cool.
because I thought that in French and English it's gonna be different. It would get published, but I think Spanish was like very emotional for me.
Yeah.
And it was, and I really needed to do it fast. Because it was very dear to, it was very cherished and very dear to my heart. And I also thought I wanted to make a tour with it. So the tour is one of the most interesting parts of the book, I think.
Yeah.
I organized a whole tour in Spain with queer feminists and other organizations, art organizations over there that I don't know. I just sent the invitation and people invited me and co-organized the events with me all around Spain. So I went on a tour for a month, and that was an amazing experience just to meet the people, and also was an experience to talk about these issues with other people and like create something together. So it was not me bringing my North American knowledge and politics.
Yeah.
It was like a chance for everyone to share and for me to learn a lot. And I did also in New York, which is very good. And I'm going to do it in Montreal in August, Toronto, I don't know when. And Latin America tour next year because the book is pretty well known over there. It's very well known in Spain too. Cool. It was on TV and journalism. It was very fun. It's really fun.
What are some of the like things that you learned coming out of your tour? Like, what are the things that you took with you that you're still thinking about?
I mean, that politics are always like relative. We don't have the truth. You know, there are many things that we don't know, and things are very complex.
Yeah.
So. Not to think that I have the truth because, and not to think that my community is always right. I think we were probably right for our context, but when we go somewhere else, it's different, the context is different. So just to be very, very open about it.
That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's probably an interesting process to translate things that you wrote into your mother tongue
and then
to be able to communicate with.
Yeah, and it's really difficult. I learned also that. Why I write in French and English is because there's a way of... I talk... all the stories are about myself.
Yeah.
And they're very vulnerable. People always say, you're very vulnerable and you show so many things about you. But I don't talk my mother tongue, so I never...
It's kind of a way to protect yourself.
Yeah. I'm always protecting myself with the language. But when I have to talk about myself in Spanish, that was really, really complicated.
Huh.
Because then it's really me.
Yeah.
I don't have any defense.
I didn't think about that for a second. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's just like there's certain ways that we are able to communicate certain things using certain filters, and when that filter is taken away, what happens, you know?
Yeah, then I felt really, really naked.
Yeah.
Which before was the same stories, but when I'm telling them in English or French, I always have my underwear on.
Yeah.
You say, no?
Yeah.
But when I'm talking in Spanish, I don't have anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's kind of it's returning back to yourself in this way.
Yeah.
But then maybe, did you feel like you were more able to connect with people because you were more vulnerable? Or
no, I found that I was like, suddenly I was scared of people.
Yeah.
I was like, don't ask me any more questions. And also, because it was also more difficult for me to communicate because our language is also the way you communicate things.
Yeah.
You know, and like I've been out of Spain for so many years. That I keep the language, but the way of communicating is not the same.
Yeah.
So I also have to learn how people communicate, how people touch each other. You know, people were like opening their houses to me, taking me everywhere.
Yeah.
And how do you take that? I don't have the same way of socializing. And I love it. I learned to do it. I relearned to do it. But it was a whole process.
A familiar and unfamiliar at the same time, because you're not the same person.
Exactly, and I think that's a migrant identity. It's about that. It's about like being an outsider in the place where you live, but also in the place where you're from.
Yeah,
because you can never return. There are things that you don't understand. You lose contact with.
Yeah. And so then the question of, like, where are you from becomes even more infuriating.
Exactly, because I was asked, where are you from?
Yeah.
Because of my clothes, my way of talking, the ideas I was bringing. Yeah. I didn't know the good songs. I didn't know the joke. I didn't know the books. I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's a good segue into the other project you're working on.
Yeah.
The accent project. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So I'm working in two projects. They're very intertwined together. One is called This Is About Having an Accent. It's a comic about having an accent. It's very, the title is very clear.
Yeah.
And it's a comedy in English about my experience of being a person with a Spanish accent in the organizing community. So it talks about how people react to accents in an interpersonal way. Like, for example, I have this theory that people with accents get more interrupted, or like people get tired of listening to people with accents. Or like people, for example, when I say, oh, I'm in Spanish, people are always going to try to show me the 5 words they know in Spanish. When I know much more English than they know Spanish.
Yeah.
So it's always like, you know, and from that point of view, and also like from the idea of like, when I say I'm in Spanish, suddenly everyone talks about like the South American revolutions and Che Guevara, or like they will talk about the Spanish anarchists. You know, and it's interesting, but I mean, I have a relationship with that history that is different, you know, because I had family like dying, so I don't see the thing so easily, you know. I don't see, it's much more complex, and it also has an effect on me in my present. So I'm always like, the book talks a lot about all these things, and I also use it to make workshops like about anti-oppression politics related to language. So how do we think language, and how do we work with people who has different mother tongues than English and French?
This is the June 16th edition of These Things That People Make, and we're in the middle of the show. I am airing an interview that I did with Coco Riot and Mr. Lim at Naco Cafe. And if you want to check out Coco's work while you listen to the interview, you can go to CocoRiot.com.
I'm usually told that I have a cute accent, which is very patronizing. But because cute is something they use for animals, like it's not. I think it's better that you say that what I'm saying is interesting than cute.
Yeah.
You know, it's always like, oh, well. But it's also like to see that my accent is cute because of my gender and because of my race and because of my class and because of my body. Because some accents are seen as dangerous.
Yeah.
For example, which is not the case for my accent because of how all these things like intertwine and combined with each other. People see my accent or hear my accent as cute but not dangerous.
Coco, you mentioned a few times about inside and outside.
Mm-hmm.
What can you elaborate on that?
Oh, that's a good question. Wow, inside and outside. Well, I think the inside, I don't feel inside anything. Like, I don't feel inside, for example, the queer community many, many times because of my accent or because of my grand background culture. I don't feel that I belong. So I always feel a little bit of outside. And I feel a little bit of outside in the Hispanophone queer community because of being queer. And I feel a bit of outside in Spain because I live in Canada. But I've taken the decision that being outside is a good thing. I'm a very positive person.
So. I can understand the outside here.
Yeah.
But it seems to me like you're talking about outside from Spain.
Yeah.
So what does it mean? Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, it means that I left Spain like, say, 11 years ago. And I feel that when I come back, there are things that I don't understand anymore. And then, or like, for example, the way I dress and the way I interact with people, it's not the same. Because, you know, the culture has, the culture continues and the people continues. And I'm not there.
I know. So why did you leave Spain?
Well, I left Spain because, well, you know where I'm from.
That's where you live.
Yeah.
It's so amazing.
It's amazing. So you know that it's not an easy place to find a job. It's not an easy place to be yourself in many ways. And I always wanted to go out. I always knew that I was going to go out. And I come from a family with a migration history, and I was like always believed that that was not my hometown. So when I was a kid, I was like, I want to go out. I told you about my dream yesterday.
You see, I understand that, and I think in Spain, of course, it's very deep in culture, very deep in history. So why did you want to get up from there? Why?
Well, I had the chance to leave, and I could have moved to a bigger city, but I had the chance to leave to France, and I wanted to leave my hometown. It was not my plan to leave Spain, but I wanted to leave my hometown because it's very traditional, because I felt that I couldn't expand my possibilities. I wanted to grow. I wanted to know things outside. I wanted to know languages. I wanted to live in other places to have more experience. So I got a grant that allowed me to study in France, and I took it.
I sort of understand that. You want to be outside, away from the Spanish tradition, which is understandable. But now you mentioned that while you're living here, you also feel outside.
Yeah.
So how does that feel?
It feels very sad sometimes. It feels that I'm always going to be in this outside position while I live here. And if I move back to Spain, it will take me a while to get used to the Spanish way of doing things because I've never lived as an adult in Spain. So now I have to learn, how do you get a job? How do you make taxes? How do you go to the doctor? I don't know. All these things, I don't know.
I think Spaniards will be fascinated by that. But anyway, I should end here. You don't have a cute accent. You have a very charming accent.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Lin.
Charming, yeah.
Thank you. I will take that. I will accept that. That's very good. I like that.
I know that you also used to distribute zines. You had a zine distro.
Are you
still doing that?
No. Because I have so many zines on my own that I only distribute mine.
That's awesome.
And I am a bestseller of mine than the others. So, yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to just sort of hear your critiques or thoughts on the zine community that you participate in, or the zine communities that you participate in Montreal and elsewhere.
Okay. I think it's a very Anglophone-centric. And I think this is usually in many zine spheres, especially in queer zine spheres. I'm the only Francophone. I'm putting like, how do you say?
Quotation.
Yeah. I'm the only Francophone person in this zine sphere, which seems totally ridiculous because I'm not Francophone.
Yeah.
So I'm the only person selling zines in French. And I think so Anglophone-centric. And I think sometimes it's very... zines also have evolved in this very weird way, some of them, to be very artistic and to be very expensive. And so I think we're like getting out of the DIY and like sharing and like anti-class and anti-capitalist value that was part of the zine community. They're still part of some zines community.
I've noticed that in the last 2 or 3 years, where there's been a serious shift, in Montreal in particular, because that's where I've spent most of my time, even though I live here now. Like, all of a sudden, like, not about content, and about, like, beauty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's